Hello, everybody, and welcome. You are listening to Use Your Words, Writers Speak on KURU 89.1. As you've probably guessed, this is not Elise Stewart. This is JJ Amawuro-Wilson. I'm your host for this week. But I do have a very, very special guest who is our regular host, Elise Stewart. Welcome, Elise.
Thank you.
Elise was the second poet laureate of Silver City in Grant County. In fact, she was so good, we named her twice. She served from 2014 to 2016, and then we realized she had unfinished business, and so we gave her another year. We gave her an extra year. Elise conducted over 100, is that right? Over 100 workshops with youth in Silver City and Grant County. She is what I would call a literary activist. She is a wonderful, wonderful poet. She brought out a book of poems called Another Door Calls quite recently, just this year, actually. And she has just brought out a memoir called My Mother and I, We Talk Cat. This is a wonderful book. Elise, many congratulations on My Mother and I, We Talk Cat. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about the book?
Sure. The book came into being from this poem called My Mother and I, We Talk Cat. And when I lived in Seattle, I was driving around and that title just came to me because that was the only thing my mother could talk about at the end of her life, everything related to cats. So and she had a large cat love going on in her life.
And it's a great title, I have to say.
It is. It worked well for...
Yeah. Now, to say that your mother was a complex character would be an understatement. Can you just tell the listeners just a little bit about her?
Sure. She was a rather mysterious woman. She was a wounded woman, and she continued to bring girl children into the world and then like a cat, just kind of leave them along the wayside because she really couldn't take care of herself. She was an alcoholic for much of her life and did join AA and quit. But she also had a mental illness, which I didn't know about until after she passed away, but it explained so many things to me. She was bipolar, and I never understood how sometimes she would be warm and sometimes she would not be. And it was very confusing as a child, particularly, to try and understand her or get close to her.
Yes. Can I ask you why you chose to write the memoir? I mean, the dominant character, of course it's you, because you're the narrative voice, but really the dominant character is, of course, your mother. Why did you choose to write it?
It didn't seem that I had much choice.
Oh.
My mother has been quite a force. I'd say she's been the most difficult relationship in my life, this lifetime, and she taught me so many things, and just with all challenging people, we learn so much from them, and sometimes it's difficult to sift through the pain to find the lesson, just like the pearl within the oyster. And so in writing this book, it really helped me see more objectively who my mother was, not just as a daughter, but as a person, and to try and understand her story and look at her side rather than just my side. So it was a very healing experience, and it's a story that has freed me to a great degree from the attachment to my own childhood. And it was kind of, I think, the bonus for writing this. I never knew that would happen.
So would you say it was cathartic?
Yes.
writing it down?
I would.
It's interesting. I read another memoir by a local writer just last year called All the Wrong Places. I don't know if you know it. It's by Phil Connors, who, of course, wrote Fire Season. That was his first book, which was, you know, won all these awards. And I thought All the Wrong Places was also a terrific memoir, and that is about his brother's suicide, a book that's also full of pain and very personal. And I remember talking to Phil about it, and he said that one of the big tricks of memoir is deciding what to leave out, because obviously you can't put everything in. Now, I'm just wondering if this was something you came across when you were writing the book, what to leave out, because it's not a long book, and I'm sure there are other stories you could have told.
Right, there is. And I decided to really work on the childhood portion and into the teenagers, and then I kind of skipped quite a few years in between that didn't really pertain to my mother and came to our relationship at the end of our lives, at the end of her life.
Yep.
And so, yes, I did have to make choices about that.
And can I ask you a question? It's not too personal, but has anyone else in the family read it?
My daughter, Jessie, has read it, and she really liked it. And she's having her son, who's 16, read it, and or he wants to read it. And I just gave it to my aunt and uncle, gave it to my son. So, yes, it is making the family rounds. My mother, you know, passed away 16 years ago.
Right.
And it's taken all this time to really write.
Right.
And I don't have that many living relatives left.
Right. Okay.
So I have my kids.
Right. So you're fairly safe.
I think so.
I think so.
Yes, exactly right. Yes.
Elise, would you care to read us either an extract or a poem from it? Or?
I'd love to read something. Yeah. When I started writing, I went to the Mimbrus Hot Springs Ranch, you know, and I wrote my prologue, which I carried around in my purse for the entire year because I loved it so much. Mm-hmm. And because it kind of encouraged me to go ahead with this, because a memoir is definitely self-indulgent to a certain degree.
Sure.
But it also clears the way or clears the path for, I think, deeper writing. And that's what I think this book has done for me.
Sure.
This is my prologue. Yellow cottonwood leaves fall on the surface of the pool. Some drift down, remain on the bottom. Reach down to clear them. When my hand dips in, the water is stirred. As I bring up the leaves, the water becomes cloudy. In a moment, it is transparent, and everything appears as it was, yet the leaves are gone. Writing this book, I disrupt the water of memory, pull up the past to change the present.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And this is the first poem in the book about my mother and I, and I think it describes us, the swing. We sit on the swing in the back porch. It is night, always night with my mother. We have matching sundresses this summer, thin, red, see-through material with tiny white polka dots. The red kind of scratchy against my chest, the skirt sticking out like a weary tutu when I walk. Tired, leaning against my mother, my legs dangling off the front of the swing. She's singing to herself. Her voice is low, smoky, a little off-key. I love it because she's giving me attention, and I'll take anything she gives. She leans over to brush a strand of hair away from my face and keeps singing. The screen porch is in shadow, but light shines softly from inside the house. My mother is like that, too. In the twilight world of almost asleep, she rocks us, pushing her foot against the floor every now and then, holding her song inside me, reminds me to listen for music in the darkness.
That's terrific. I've always loved that. That last line reminds me to listen for music in the darkness. Yeah, that's excellent. Talking of music, you are a musician, you're a composer, you're a piano player, right? You're a
pianist, piano teacher.
Piano teacher also. I'm wondering, how did writing and music help you in kind of recovering from what is obviously quite a fractured childhood that you had?
Music saved me, absolutely saved me. I got a piano when I was six, and it was from my father's mother, so it came from the East and
That's
traveled.
That's in the book, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Like the Magi, yes. It came across to Minnesota, where I grew up, and when I pictured it, I saw all this light coming down from tall windows and light on the... And that we didn't even have a room like that in my house. But that is how I saw it. Because when I started playing, my mother took me to lessons, and I started composing right away. And I found a Billy Taylor book in the piano bench. Where did that come from? And jazz, you know. And I started changing endings, and I was in love with it because it was a way to express myself, and there wasn't many ways that I could do that. And the beauty of music along with poetry is that, you know, poetry is an attempt to explain in words and bring everything down to a nutshell. And music is a way, to me, to expand it all and let it go out just in sound waves. And so they're very companionable. They're nice mix. They're nice friends, you know. When sometimes I can't write, then I'll play. When I can't play, I'll write. And between the two, I'm able to say something that I need to say. Yeah,
that's wonderful. Yeah, yeah. One thing I really loved about the memoir is that it seems to capture a certain time and a certain mood in the United States. There are things like things very much from the 60s and 70s, communal living, road trips, the hippie era. I loved all the details. There's a little section in which you talk about baking bread for the commune that you were living in, and then the bread all gets eaten in about 10 seconds by all these sort of ravenous people living in the commune. You barely get a tiny piece of it. You mention a Jimi Hendrix concert. You remember mention Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones. You talk about U.S. Customs tearing your car apart when you return from Canada because you guys are all hippies with long hair. So there's all those period details, which I really loved. And I was just wondering, it seems as though we were living in a more optimistic time in those days. There's something very idealistic about those times, even though you were going through difficult personal times.
Absolutely. That, too, was a saving thing. You know, I left home when I was 16 in 1968, the very end of the hippie time, and I was fortunate to be in the Midwest where things moved a little slower. But things were changing right at that moment, too. It wasn't as quite safe and sweet as it all used to be. But there was a great emphasis on discovering things and expanding boundaries and different kind of consciousness. And people that you just met could become your friend in about 5 minutes. You could have a different tribe, a different family, and you became close from shared experience. And that was definitely a wonderful thing during that time when I didn't have anyone else. Yeah.
And did you write? Were you writing while you were living in the commune?
Yeah, and I was even writing in 1968. Yeah, wow. I was writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are going to take a short break. You're listening to Use Your Words, Writers Speak. I am interviewing normally my co-host, Elise Stewart, about her new memoir, My Mother and I, We Talk Cat. So please come back. We'll just be 1 minute. Welcome back. You are listening to Use Your Words, Writers Speak on KURU 89.1. I am JJ Amaworo Wilson, and I'm interviewing someone who's usually my co-host, Elise Stewart, about her book, My Mother and I, We Talk Cat, a memoir. Elise, one thing that intrigued me was the photo on the front cover. Mm-hmm. Where did this come from, and how come there's that line between your mother and you, which is so incredibly apposite because of the content of the book? Where did it come from, this photo?
It's an old photo. There's not many photos of my mother and I. There's probably 6 or 7 photos in existence. And I found this photo, and I'm about 15 in it. And
I was going to say, you look about 15, and you look a head taller than your mother.
And my mother was 5'1", yes.
Right.
I was already tall.
And this line down the middle.
It was a crease in the photograph.
A crease.
Yes.
Which really sums up the
quite
whole
quite a metaphor
thing.
I know.
Quite
that's why
metaphor.
It had to be the cover.
Yeah.
It was a great find.
What a find. Yeah. Yeah. We've already talked about your mother being a complex character, and that she had certain mental issues, mental problems. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing you mention in the book is shock treatment.
Yes. You know, when I started writing, I started writing kind of a blamey poem about my mother called Not Like My Mother, about how, you know, now she's going to go and she's going to go out at night. She's never coming back, and she's going to drink some more, and, you know. And then I remembered that when I visited her in the beginning of the poem, I visited her in the hospital. And my grandmother and grandfather and I sat there, and it was very strange. It was not like my mother. And then I realized I'd been told by my aunt that she had shock treatment in the late 50s. They gave it for depression, you know. And my mother really never was the same. She wasn't the same person after that. And when I began to think about that, I had so much more compassion for her situation. And when I looked up shock treatment, which is still being done today under kind of a different name with nice little, you know, an acronym about it.
Sure.
In this country, in Australia.
Right. Acronyms are often used to hide the real words, aren't they? It's like PTSD.
Yes.
It just hides.
Yeah, the truth of it.
Yeah.
Yes, what it is. That Ernest Hemingway had shock treatment.
Right.
And 3 days later, you know, took his life. Sylvia Plath, Dick Cavett, Zelda Fitzgerald, Vladimir Horowitz.
They all had shock treatment.
Quite a few people that were incredibly talented and famous had shock treatment. And I ended up writing a poem about it, just picturing it in my mind from what I've seen and what I've read. The author Janet Frame from New Zealand also had shock treatment, and she's written about it intensively, and it describes it very well.
Yeah. So, would you like to read us the poem?
Yeah, I will.
Yeah.
Not like my mother. We go to the hospital to see her before Christmas. Light green walls, gray linoleum floor, little specks of blue and yellow in it. She doesn't look at us, but keeps looking down as if she sees something there. She wears a faded blue bathrobe and dirty slippers on her feet. No makeup or lipstick, hair brushed back from her face. Not like my mother. She is subdued but jittery. Her hands never still. One forefinger rubs against her thumb constantly. My grandma and grandpa and I leave her after a long wintry hour. 30 years later, I find out she had shock treatment for depression, they said. They wheeled her into a room, gave her an injection, strapped her to a table. Unable to move her body, she watched the machine designed to shock her brain. They told her it would cure her depression, the downward spiral. Then they stuck a rubber heel into her mouth between her teeth, couldn't scream or whimper. The doctor turned the dial to shaking. They wheeled her back into the white room, locked the door. When she woke again, it felt like there were holes in her memory, a strange emptiness. They came again to take her to that room. This time she fought and screamed. They gave her the injection and held her down. My mother comes home soon after that, but not all of her. She never speaks of what happened, starts drinking more and more. She has lapses, sometimes cold and removed from everything and everyone, rarely approachable, never the same, always angry, not like my mother.
That's very powerful stuff. You said to me that she was never the same afterwards, and this never the same comes up in the poem, at the end of the poem. She appeared to be a very vivacious lady.
She was. She was very charismatic.
She was an actress.
You wanted to watch her. You know, she had this wonderful way about her. Vivace in Italian, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's so descriptive of how she was, you know.
And then after the shock treatment?
Yes, I remember she was going to come visit me at school, you know, the way parents can do, or they could then. And I lied and said I was sick because I didn't want her to come, because I never knew, you know, if she'd be the mother that was drinking or the mother that was not drinking. And I was afraid in school to find out what would happen, so I pretended I was sick. And she stayed home, and I just remember the way she sat in the chair, just kind of removed that morning. She stayed home anyway, and otherwise she'd go to work every day. And that removal was just kind of unusual, just like she was an observer watching things, not a part of anything. It was not her usual way.
Right.
And that was after
the shock
treatment.
I have to say, in the poem, it sounds more like torture than
treatment.
The word treatment doesn't sound appropriate at all.
I think some of the doctors liked it a little too much.
Let me ask you about the decision to put poetry in the memoir. I mean, it's not all memoirs have poetry. Not all memoir writers are poets, of course. I thought this was a very interesting thing, and for me, it definitely added something. Can you let us know a little bit about why you decided to put some poems in the memoir?
It actually started to be all poetry.
Uh-oh.
Because that's what I do. And so I carried it around for a while and then realized, like beads on a string, they weren't going to make sense if I didn't tie them together with some prose. They weren't going to carry it. It wasn't strong enough. So I needed to write the prose to fill in between these poetry beads on the string. And so I ended up with the poems first and the prose second.
Right, okay.
And that was interesting. And I'd written a lot of prose before, but I had to, you know, change it and make it so that it fit and in the right places. So it worked out.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly did. Yeah. You launched the book at the Southwest Festival of the Written Word.
I did.
How was the festival for you this year?
The festival is like the best holiday in the world for me, beyond any holiday I can think of. You know, everyone running around learning about writing, it's heaven for me.
Yeah.
It was just wonderful. We had such great authors, and everyone was very kind and generous with their work and in teaching and speaking. It was just a lovely event. Mm. I just loved it.
Did you get to see anyone you really liked?
I did. Well, you know, I'm quite fond of Stella Pope Duarte, and I got to facilitate the panel with her and Sharman Abdrussel and Marcella Duarte. So that was
Maricela, is it?
Yes. That was very fun.
That was our wise women panel,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, it was great.
Words of wisdom? Were there a few words of wisdom flying around?
There was.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It was wonderful. And how wonderful to have women sharing their own lives. And these women were at kind of different stages of writing and different stages of life. So that was wonderful too.
Mm. Anyone else?
There were some people that I wished I could have seen. Mm. I did see Tim Hernandez, who I thought was a fantastic presenter with a great story.
He's terrific, isn't he?
From history that I'd never known about. So
yeah, his book, All They Will Call You.
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful book. I think we'll probably try and get him on the show at some point.
Yes, we can.
We hope we can.
Yes, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any more to read for us?
I do. I could read this little poem called Runaway. So, yes, I'll just run back to 1968 for a moment.
Okay.
Early in the morning, I leave my house with my mother and stepfather sleeping. Stashed in my red Greek bag are books, my glasses, an extra pair of jeans. I leave for school as usual with a piece of toast in my hand, walk in the high school's heavy front doors and out the back. Powerful, this feeling of freedom. I wait at Loring Park near my friend's apartment until her mother goes to work. Sit on one of the swings, brown hair whipping my face in the wind, watching birds fly, paw the ground with toes of my moccasins, the kind with fringe, the ones with thin leather for a sole. It is a gray October morning, the long prelude to winter just beginning. A scruffy man comes by. I ask for a cigarette. He gives me one and we talk, blowing out plumes of smoke. I try to tell him I'm changing the whole pattern of my life, how I am only beginning to be free. I want to eat freedom, drink it, live it. I do not tell him I met a girl 2 days ago who's on the run from the detention center, or that I will go to her apartment soon and we will dye my hair black, walk to the other side of town, find somewhere to live. I do not tell him that in a few weeks she will steal the only things I have, my red Greek bag, my jeans and books and glasses, and go off with some bikers. I don't even know that yet. Walking out of the park, leaving empty swings behind, I glance back at the swans, swimming around and around the pond. Freedom strengthens me, my innocence carries me as I walk into my own life.
Mm. That's great. I really love that. I love your last lines always.
I try those last lines.
I think it's interesting with this particular book, the subject could have been kind of depressing. You know, it's about family. It's about someone who's been ill for a large part of their life, someone who drinks too much and was what one would call a bad mother. And yet the book is somehow uplifting. Well, that was my impression from reading it. I did not feel depressed at all about it. I felt, and I think the reason for this is because the author, the narrative voice, which is you, was always growing and branching out and finding escape, Would that be an accurate description of the book and your life, perhaps? I don't know.
I think so. I think so. And, you know, the ending between my mother and I was much better than our beginning. It ended on an uplifting note.
And a note of acceptance as well, I would say.
Yes, yes. Yeah. After a life of not understanding and wanting my mother to be someone else, I could finally accept her. And that was a wonderful, pretty much a miraculous event.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure writing had a lot to do with
it
this
did.
Sort of growth and development and acceptance, just writing it down.
When she died, one of the first things I thought was, now I can write.
Wow.
A freedom there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have plans for the book? Any particular plans? Are you going to give any readings, or have you thought about it? I know you're kind of busy right now.
Yes.
Teaching full-time.
I went back to work. But I do. I like to read at the library, and I'm going to get a little more serious about getting some reviews out and reading in other places. I just needed a little time with this book. This book is very revealing, and even though I plan to do it, it's just a little more personal than anything I've ever written.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's coming next?
What coming next? Fiction. I'm ready for fiction.
Well, it's funny you say that, because isn't November National Novel Writing Month?
It is.
And we're right on the cusp of November.
NaNoWriMo.org is how it is.
I think you should come up with a novel in a month, Elise, even though you're working full-time and super busy.
It's a blast to do. I did it before and wrote a huge amount. So it's a good possibility for November.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, listeners, you have been listening to Use Your Words, Writers Speak on KURU 89.1. I'm JJ Amawodo Wilson. I've been speaking with Elise Stewart. Please get her book, My Mother and I, We Talk Cat, which is available where?
On Amazon.
On Amazon. Thank you, and speak to you next time.